So welcome again to this week's Football Fans Podcast. This is the pod that gives the real fans, you know by now, a real voice. I don't have anybody on this pod that fence sits, ums and ahs, is indecisive. We don't have it on the FFP, straight and raw. That's how we give it to you.
Only Saturday did I think, actually, hold on, what's going on over that Stoke? That was Barcelona-esque type play that I'm watching here.
There's only about 1.something% of senior positions that belong to someone of a black and ethnic minority background in football. That's embarrassing as far as I'm concerned.
I think in terms of their fan base, from what I hear and what I read, they have a bit of that Liverpool about them, where they're historically a big club and maybe the expectations of the fans are above what they can realistically achieve now.
My name is Jordan, and just before I announce my panel for this week, another reminder that you can follow us and join the FFP family on our Twitter page, FFP_11. Those that want to subscribe to the page via iTunes can do so, Football Fans Podcast. If you like it, like what you hear, share it. If you don't, still share it and subscribe. I won't take it personally. And we also have a competition that we will be doing at the end of this show. So listen to the show carefully because there will be a question at the end of the show. We'll be giving away a copy of the latest Football Manager 2016. The nice people at Sports Interactive giving us a game to give away to you lovely people. So listen intently and there'll be a question at the end of the show to give away as part of our competition. Right, so let's get to my panel for this week. My first guest is our resident supporter of the team that's currently 15th, 16th, 17th. I don't know where they are in the league right now. Possibly in the Europa League by next week. Managerless possibly by the week after that. Now, I'm giving you your own singled out intro because last week you were saying how you wanted your own.
I did.
Big personal, big up intro. So I'm giving it to you. Gabriel, how you doing, sir?
Yeah, it's a great intro, Josh. Thank you very much.
But where are you? Because I literally don't know where you are in the league.
Well, I've told you so many times over the show, I don't look at the table till at least Christmas.
It's a 2 months.
That's not getting far away, but... But yeah, I mean, and Europa League might be our best way back into the Champions League next year, so...
You'll take it. I'll take it. And we also have our United supporter making his second appearance on the pod. Zeke?
Second, yes. I'm glad to be back. Thanks for having me back.
Feeling good?
Yeah, well, today's Tuesday. We're playing later on today, so
I was going to say, unlike your team, because right now
I'm feeling good. Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Could translate that love to your team and positivity, because
I'm sending it.
Good times. And our third guest on the pod this week is many of you will know him as the father of Tottenham winger Andros Townsend, but most of you will know him as the main man behind Kick It Out, head of education and development. Is that correct?
Yeah, education and development manager, that's correct.
There we go.
I'll take the head as well. That's fine.
Yeah. Troy Townsend, welcome.
Promotion.
How are you?
Good evening. It's a pleasure to be here. Looking forward to the chat and the banter that goes with it as well.
Thank you very much for coming on the pod this week. I'm glad to have you on the pod here. We're going to talk a little bit about the work you do at Kick It Out and what Kick It Out generally do. Then we're going to get on to some football talk about the season between the four of us. But before we get onto that, you're a Tottenham fan, right?
I am indeed.
Right. So our regular Tottenham supporter on the pod, Ollie, I spoke to him yesterday, just chatting about the season and how things are going. And he's generally pleased, but he's a little bit peeved at the amount of draws that Tottenham are getting.
Yeah.
And more importantly than that, draws from winning positions. Mm. Now, I want just to quickly ask you, first of all, what are your views on the season so far? And how do you feel about the draws? They're not lost since the first day of the season against United.
We're not lost since United, but there's 8 draws in there.
There's a lot. Now, would you prefer those draws which bring confidence because you're not losing on points? Or is it better sometimes to have 2 wins and 2 defeats than 4 draws?
Let's be serious. In a league at the moment that is so wide open, as wide open as what we've ever seen in the Premier League, I'd have taken a couple of more wins. Because realistically, we're fourth, we're fifth. We could be top. That gap is so small at the moment that, like you say, a couple of those draws turned into wins from good positions could see us top. I think we have a phobia of being top. I just don't think Tottenham know how to do it. And so we always kind of stay fourth and fifth because it kind of looks good on the CV. And I'm not quite sure if we could handle being up there. But we've got a young, vibrant team. Obviously, you know, not losing breeds kind of the confidence that we'd want. But then again, like you say, you look at it and you look at, you know, even down to Saturday at West Bromwich Albion, if you're going to win leagues, if you're going to be in the Champions League, you have to win games like that. And I know that, you know, they'll say, well, they beat Arsenal couple of weeks ago. I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in what Spurs do. And if you are going to win leagues, then you go and win those games as horrible as possible. But again,
just get it done.
Yeah, there's the same core players have played a lot of games recently. And I think we can see, I thought we were fortunate against Chelsea. Chelsea came for something and they got it. I think if Chelsea had upped their game a little bit, then, you know, we might have struggled there. Not bigging up no one from Chelsea in this room at all. obviously, we've taken a point. So that's four drop points. Let's talk again back in May and see what, you know, what we're talking about when we say, you know, those little games where should have nicked something, didn't nick something, and that could be what cost us at the end of the day.
I want to talk a little bit about yourself and Kick It Out. So I think most people will know what the work that you do there at Kick It Out. But for those that don't, tell us, first of all, what your role at Kick It Out is and just generally what Kick It Out is all about.
My role, there's a good few roles at the moment, I think. One of them is to support young players as they develop in the game. So today I've been to both Bristol clubs, Bristol City and Bristol Rovers, just delivering life skills training. Everything away from the pitch. It's not down to me to tell them what they're doing right and wrong on the pitch or on the training ground, but it is to educate them a little bit. You know, they're in a very privileged position, these young players, but there's so many perils out there. When I was younger, when I was growing up, it only mattered what you did on the training ground and what you did when you played. The game's evolved now and there's so much more focus on young players, and we have to educate them about the issues that there are out there in the game as well, so that they're able to tackle them when they come across. You know, as they grow and develop in the game, it can be a very picky industry. Do you know what I mean? And any topic could raise its ugly head at any stage. And now, with the status that players have, the role model status, and the fact that when they talk, people like to listen, young players have to upskill themselves a lot more. And there's a lot more into the development of a young man now, rather than just playing the game. So we deliver training to, or I deliver training to, Football League scholars, 16 to 18-year-olds. But we've also got a partnership now with the Premier League, which we've started this season. And we deliver training from 11 all the way through to development squad, which is 21s. We deliver to coaches and we deliver to parents, because everyone's got to have the same message on board. It's no point the coaches not understanding what the players are talking about, and it's no point that the players don't understand the coaches. And the very important part that parents have to play in all this as well. You know, some parents, and I've heard it in a couple of deliveries that I have, already believe that their son at 9 years of age has made it. And, you know, they criticise and they elevate them to a platform that no 9-year-old should be anymore. You know, first and foremost, they should be enjoying the game, the beautiful game, and playing with a smile on their face. I've heard a story of a young man that's gone home and not spoken to his dad for 2 days because his dad has criticised him about his game. And that, you know, and we talk about the impact of young players in English football. That's where it starts.
The pressure, just so young, pressure, they the forget pressure. How to enjoy what they're doing. Therefore, that stunts their development because they don't like it anymore.
Well, everyone sees the end goal. Everyone sees the £250,000 a week player. Everyone sees what that £250,000 brings. And of course, it's only the elite players that are on that. What about the journey in between there? What about the support, the guidance, and the help that a young player needs to develop? The game is a roller coaster ride. You know, one minute you're as high as a kite, the next minute you could be as low as, and you need picking up. And I think a lot more parents need to understand the jewel that they have, but also support and just give them a normal life. And I think sometimes too many parents take them out of the realm of that. So it's important to be able to get you know, those kind of messages, because obviously I've been through the system and I've been a parent through the system as well. So I understand it, and the impact of the kind of sessions that we have, they're very good. They're very, very good. So, you know, educating in that way. And then another part of my job is to try and to provide opportunities for, you know, underrepresented groups in the game. So people from a AME background, you know, women, people of disability, or, you know, whatever, from any kind of background that is not represented in the game. You know, you look at the top of the game. The top of the game looks all the same. All in those government positions, all in those positions of power. Everybody looks the same. So what we're now trying to do is get a new, younger element, upskilled, get them into opportunities that, you know, they can start affecting the game, because the game has to freshen itself up all the time. And you don't, you know, football's this bubble where it's very hard to get in. When you're inside, it's very hard to get out unless you're completely, you know, you do something completely stupid. But it's in a working environment, it's very, very hard to get in. So we hold conferences where, you know, we've had the pleasure of yourself, and you, you know, the knowledge that you have, you can pass on to the younger generation. When I was growing up, I never had that. We were told to get out there, you know, the world's out there, go out and go and meet it. Younger people now need that support, need that guidance, and particularly, you know, in the various opportunities that there are in the game. You know, I try and support those journeys and those pathways as much as we can.
Okay, and on got a question regarding equality, which is a big element of what Kick It Out does. How much progress are you seeing in football, in the game, in regards to BME, a presence, you know, not only on the pitch, but also in management, in boardrooms? Are you seeing, progression?
Yeah.
And if you are you seeing it as fast as you would like to see it?
I've got to mind what I say, because I got criticised a couple of weeks ago talking about Chris Ramsey and took words that I said kind of wrong. I'm seeing change. The thing that it is, it's not as quick as what people want it to be. You know, I had the privilege of going through the on-board program recently, which is, you know, getting ex-professional players from a black and ethnic minority background and women upskilled so that they can start affecting boardrooms, so that they can understand the mechanics of a boardroom. I currently sit on a county FA board, and it's given me a real insight into an area where I used to criticise quite a lot. But there's no point criticising if you don't understand it. So what I want to do is get in there and actually understand what happens in a boardroom, what decisions they make, who are they listening to, what powers do they have. And I think that can only help the game as we step forward. You know, I was part of the second cohort of about 20 people that have gone through that process. The first cohort included Les Ferdinand, Chris Ramsey, Jason Roberts and those likes. And you've seen now that Les is obviously, you know, he was sitting on the board at the FA, and now he's got this opportunity and he's director of football at QPR. It can only help, you know, if we're getting more people going through that kind of training and then sitting in various boards around the country and adding their value, adding their opinion, and for us to be taken seriously. You know, football has this way of only taking people seriously if you're in a senior role, if you're someone of presence. Yeah. And, you know, at the end of the day, there's so much value out there. And if we can start getting ourselves in senior positions, unfortunately, there's only about 1.something% of senior positions that belong to someone of a black and ethnic minority background in football. That's embarrassing as far as I'm concerned. That is embarrassing. We have over 25% playing the game. We have less than 3% managing in the game. There's a definite disparity there. And we're trying to do as much as we can to help and support that kind of journey.
And you mentioned there, Les Ferdinand, QPR have employed Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank as their new manager this week. How much do you think, or how important do you feel it is that we have people like Les Ferdinand in those roles? Because somebody like him will be conscious of the fact that not only in his role of employing the best manager, someone like him will be conscious of, I want to employ anyone and everyone from all backgrounds. There's no skewed kind of vision as to kind of the person that he thinks he should employ. Mm-hmm. He's employing the person that's solid, the best person, happens to be a black man, Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank, kind of off the back of a very good run at Burton. Mm-hmm. But is it important that we have people like Les Ferdinand in those roles because he's more conscious than, say, another director of football at a different club?
Yeah, of course it is. It's important that, you know, Les has played the game. He understands the game. He's elevated through positions. He's been a coach. And now he's in a position where he can hire and fire. And you know, no matter what level we are, we all need someone to look up to. We all need a role model, someone who we think, do you know what, I want to be like him. And Les has a title. Strip the title away, Les has a great knowledge about football. Having spent time with the man, having talked to him, heard his views, you know he understands the game. They've employed someone, because I'm not being funny, he is at the top of his game at the moment. My question is, why did he leave Burton? For me. But, you know, they've employed him because he has taken a club from where it was and look like they're going to get promoted again. So they've not employed on colour or race or anything like that. They've employed because they believe he's the best manager for the job.
Do you think that Les will... The cynics may say that he's employed two black managers now. The cynics may say, well, hang on a minute. It's no coincidence that you get a black director of football there and he's employed two black managers.
I don't think that's out there at the moment. I mean, you know, the criticism was, well, Les was black and he sacked Chris, who was black. That's true, what people true. Are more focused on, do you yeah. know what I mean? And then, obviously, I have people having a go at me because they presume that I said it was racist why Chris was sacked. Chris was sacked on results. And now they've got him employed Jimmy. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah, but you can't win.
You can't win. And that's the thing. You know, at the end of the day, you can't win, particularly against those what I call keyboard bashers. Yeah. You've got no chance. But Les is doing what he believes and Tony Fernandez is doing what they believe is best for QPR Football Club. I think that QPR needs a total kick everybody out and start
again. Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a total rehaul, that yeah. club. You know, they've tried to do things. They've done it wrong. They've made the same mistakes again. They've done it wrong. You know, the priorities for Chris were changed halfway through the season. Chris has gone. Give Jimmy the free reign to go and make the club what it is. And if that means no promotion this year, it's no promotion. Mm. But give him the free reign to develop the club. It's a massive club.
Okay. Just a couple of quick points to skim through, and I'll let the guys come in as well on this. How much do you feel that the Women's World Cup had a positive upward curve on women's women in the game? Do you feel that because of what they achieved coming third in the World Cup, that there's more? Do you notice now more? Because I did a talk at a school, Crown Wood in Tottenham, about 2 weeks ago. Mm. And of the 500 kids that I spoke to on that day, I would say I spoke to maybe about 50, 100, asked them what they want to be when they're older. And of the ones that I asked, I would say a third wants to be footballers. Mm. Of that third, half of them were girls. They were girls, wanted to be professional footballers. Do you feel it had a massive impact on more girls now?
It's had a massive impact, but for me, it's about sustainability. You know, we've had the World Cup. The World Cup's now gone, and the Women's Super League is now finished. I asked, probably similar to you, I asked a group of just boys, did you watch the World Cup? Yep. In unison, all yes. Have you watched women's football since? Nah. Because the World Cup was something that caught the wave of the whole nation. So you'd be stupid not to watch it because questions were always being asked. Do you know what I mean? Now it's, well, yeah, I've got something to do on that day. And I haven't got BT Sport and stuff like that. It's about the sustainable impact and keeping women's football at a level. There's so much good being said about the game and there's so many spin-offs being said. I think next season is a really important season. There needs to be a level playing field with the leagues and also development and structure below that as well. You know, promotion, relegation, and what are those leagues doing below? It's still in the public domain. And while England are continuing to do well in the European Championships and stuff like that, then it's still up there. But, you know, the game needs money. Let's be serious. The game needs money. And what I don't want to see is that Man City and Chelsea, like they do in the Premier League, start developing all the money and getting all the best players and start shooting off and leave everybody behind.
Yeah. Okay, and just last one for me. You mentioned the level playing field. I do a lot of work with, I'm in contact with the charity Level Playing Field, disabled charity. And they campaign a lot in getting better access for disabled people at football grounds across the country. Mm. I think it's only Arsenal, Swansea and there's another club in the Premier League that meets the requirements for people in wheelchairs and people with disabilities. How much more work do you think needs to be done and what can be done to ensure that everybody, regardless of disability, can enjoy the experience of watching football games?
I think it's similar with everything. So much more can be done. Enough is not enough. Do you know what I mean? When clubs say, well, we're doing that, enough is not enough. We need to do so much more.
And especially with the money that's in the game now in the Premier League. There's no excuse now, is there, really?
There's no excuse, but everyone talks about the money, but the clubs are precious about their money. And, you know, you give a club money, it's, as far as they're concerned, it's already spent. Yeah. You give them something, you know, you should be providing this, this and this. Clubs will be a little bit, you know, next season the big money really rolls in. Mm. And it'll be interesting to see the take next season on what clubs do with that money. Sure. Yeah, obviously, the first thing is transfers, etc., blah, blah, blah. But they're not out of pocket.
No, there's plenty left.
There's plenty left. And you know, football needs to govern itself better to make sure, not only for access, but there's so much more about the game that could be better. And money could be fiddled in other areas as well. Don't get me started on grassroots football because we'll be here all night. But football has that power. football needs to start using the power to make the game a better experience for everybody.
That's one. G, do you have a question for Troy?
I did have a question, Troy. Maybe I've learned a lot about what you do today. Okay. And I think because if you watch it on the TV or in the media, you kind of assume Kick It Out just aligned with racism.
Yeah.
And maybe like on the average person might not know about some of the things that you've done, which is really good. But once an incident happens, people will say, oh, okay, there's still racism in football. The FA has failed. Kick It Out has failed. Which is really unfair because if you think of racism in general, the you know the most brilliant minds in the world have tried to see if they can find solutions to it and haven't been able to.
Yeah.
What would you say would be success for Kick It Out in terms of racism, equality, and just in general?
I don't like the word success when it comes to these kind of topics. There is no success. We want the place, and I'm going to use that term again, that we want football to have a level playing field, a much leveler playing field. We want the experience of playing, of working, and of watching the game to be much better. Are we near that? Well, we can't be, because every single week there's another story. We're better on the pitch. I think we're better in the stands. We could be better around the grounds, but representation across all the board could be so much better as well. Success for me, if you're going to push me on success, is to keep making change, to keep challenging, to keep doing what we're doing, to keep giving opportunities, providing opportunities while trying to stamp out the horrible nature of the game that raises its ugly head. In this country, we're better than what they are in Europe, because we actually recognise racism and discrimination, while a lot of countries decide to turn their back on it. And if we can be at the forefront of challenging and changing, then for me, you know, not that we've done our job, but we're trying to make the game a better experience. Listen, there's a long way to go. Like it was with racism, all you know, when my role models were suffering racism in the 70s and early 80s, then there was a period where there was nothing going on. Everyone thought the game was beautiful. Then it crept its ugly head back in. Yeah. Everything is like a revolving circle. Remember when you used to wear flares? They will be back out soon. No, don't worry about that.
I wouldn't go that far, right?
No.
Go on, Z. Success for me, sorry, is just to continue trying to make change.
Thank you.
Go on, Z. Do you have something you want to say?
Yeah. Similar to Gabriel, I'm also, I've just been educated as to the full extent of the work that you guys do. And I'm really glad to hear it, really. And I think in hearing that, I think it just reinforces for me this ongoing perception that Kick It Out is sometimes perceived to be sort of a superficial approach or a badge for a cause. But when it comes down to it, it doesn't push through on the promises. And just from hearing what you've said, I think there is a disconnect between what's really happening in the background to what is then being reported in the front end.
It's a lack of knowledge.
Yeah.
If someone really wanted to sit, like we're doing today, if someone really wanted to sit down and understand what Kick It Out does, ask the question.
Yeah.
Too many people like to criticise first and foremost. Agreed. A couple of years ago, we got criticised by prominent people within the game and in media because they said that we're all about a T-shirt. That's all we were about. Yeah. We're a small organisation with 13 full-time members of staff that service 92 football clubs, the non-league game. We sit in an office above a Pizza Express. So you can see all the glamour starting to go, can't you? Do you know what I mean?
Oh.
But not too many people actually want to hear the real story. They would rather say, well, Kick It Out didn't do that, and that's it. Mm. And that includes players as well. Understand the real story, understand who we are, take some time to do some research or to get us to come in to really understand what we're doing and how we're affecting the game. Mm. Like I said to you earlier, we can't sanction anybody. If you ask me, I think we should, but we can't sanction anybody. But we're a bureau that I can provide you with the confidence of reporting to me and we'll try and deal with your case.
Yeah.
I can provide you with the confidence that we're going out there educating people. Mm. Never underestimate the power of education in this game. If you look at the number of top people within the game right the way through who have overstepped the mark with comments and words and phrases and have found themselves in front of the FA because of that, that's all part of education. That's what we provide.
Yeah.
And I think not too many people actually want to really get to know us, how much we're funded, how resourced we are, what we do with the limited amount of funds and limited amount of resources and what we provide for the game.
Yeah.
Me personally, if you take Kick It out of the industry, we're going downwards. We're going back. I feel we need to be supported a lot more. And I think that people need to understand and get on board with the messages that we are sending out and the work that we are doing before they decide to criticise first.
I 100% agree with that, and that kind of brings me on to the next part.
Oh, you've got
part.
Two. Wow.
Okay. Don't push through.
Am I allowed to? Come on. We're speaking freely here. Don't hold me back.
So I agree that I sense there's more you guys want to do. So I'm going to be slightly potentially controversial here, and the FA, would you say they're an ally or a hindrance to what, to where you want to get to?
So how close are we? How tight are we? We always could be closer. I think the game needs to come closer together. The FA, the PFA, the Premier League, you know, the government, the police,
agreed.
Europe, UEFA, FIFA. We've got to start working. You know, if we're going to really take football and grab it by its short and curlies, we all need to start having the same message en masse.
All right, so let's go on to the football now and this season. You can relax now, so you can
kick off my shoes and everything.
So I've got about 8 points, kind of bullet points, yeah. Just kind of quick fire answers I want from you to next points.
Yep.
All right.
It's like question of sport or something.
Kind of. I'm not promoting another show
or anything like that. So.
Edit that out, please.
That's all good. Spurs to lift the Premier League in May.
Spurs
to lift the Premier League in May.
Not ready yet.
Leicester, are they the real deal in terms of top four?
I think they'll flake away, but I think everybody's glorifying in what they're doing at the moment. I think they'll flake away sooner rather than later, but I'm not sure they'll make top six.
Okay, wowza. All right. Should United take a Premier League trophy win and stop moaning about the brand of football they're playing? Or should a club as big as United, it shouldn't be an either or?
Man United are shocking at the moment. Mm. But if you remember Fergie's last years when they won the title, they were not the greatest either. Mm. Put up, shut up for now, because change is happening at United. It was always going to be, once Fergie left, what was going to happen. And I think they're in that process of, they're still deciding who Man United are still.
So if this brand of football brings them the Premier League trophy, the fans shouldn't complain.
They shouldn't complain because they won't remember the brand of football. They'll remember May when they lift the trophy and the medals and they start singing again. Something will have to change in the summer because Man United fans can't keep watching what they're watching. Mm. You know, at the end of the day, you know how much Man United defenders I got in my fantasy league team? Because I know they ain't conceded. I know they ain't conceded.
It's true.
Do you know what I mean? But yeah.
Is Jack Grealish all that?
Interesting. Interesting. Jack Grealish needs to start playing football and stop messing about. Mm-hmm. He's a decent player. You can't say all that at the moment because he doesn't give himself enough time on the pitch.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Would anything other than at least a semi-final placing for England at next year's Euros be deemed a failure?
I think it has to be. Mm. World Cup last time around, I thought, not like many people, I think many people criticised England for not getting out of the group. I think getting out of the group would have been great, but I think the experience for the young players was better. Mm-hmm. To focus on this Euros now. They've got a great young squad with a great appetite. Are they ready to play in another major competition? I always feel we'll get done by an Italy who don't deserve to do us, but have the brain and the mentality to do us. So anything, listen, I think because we didn't get out the group last time, the thing is, if England lose on penalties, we're all going to have a go again.
Mm.
If they go out of a game by really giving it a go and are just beaten by the better team, I don't think anyone's going to criticise England.
Okay. Who's your three to go down?
Jeez.
Chelsea.
We're all laughing, but are we actually laughing?
I said that with a straight face.
Currently, Norwich. Mm-hmm. I think they're in free fall at the moment. I don't know why. I think they've got a good squad there, but you know they're not taking defeat pretty harsh. I think Newcastle are going to get out of it. Mm. And I don't know why, because they're shocking at the moment. But that win, what a toughie. Villa could go. I think they've been bordering on for quite a while now, Villa. They could go.
I need three names, Troy. No goods. No, I need three names. Who are your three teams to go down?
Troy's got to go back there next week. That's what I'm saying.
Yes.
Wow. Norwich.
Norwich won.
I said Norwich before, didn't I? Yeah. I can't use them twice, can I?
That's dark.
Just beat you was there last week.
Got to get out of the way.
He's down the bottom. There's too many good clubs down the bottom at the moment. Yeah. Chelsea are never going to get relegated, so let's not include Chelsea. Sunderland are going to get out.
Bournemouth?
I don't want to say Bournemouth. Look, I'm going to... All right, here we go.
Go on.
Norwich.
Mm-hmm.
Villa.
Mm-hmm.
Bournemouth on the second from last day of the season.
Ooh, cool. Late one. Okay, I've got a final one. I'm going to start with Zeke. I'm going to get all three of you this one. What's the bigger shock? Chelsea finishing in the bottom half or Leicester finishing top six?
Chelsea bottom half.
That's the bigger shock.
By, yeah, definitely.
Do you think?
Yes. I mean, yes.
Okay.
I mean, when you say bottom half, anywhere below 10.
Yeah.
So 11. No, it's, I mean, right 11. Now... What's happening at Chelsea is ridiculous. It's shocking. So, for me personally, that is definitely the biggest shock. I just can't figure out what is going so wrong that the guys that they put on the pitch can't get the job done. With Jose. I'd, for me, definitely. By the way, the biggest shock.
G, what's the big? What would you be? What would be the biggest shock in May? Thinking, rah, Leicester came sixth or Chelsea came 11th.
Well, yeah, I'd have to go with Zeke. I mean, just because, you know, you don't you rarely get a team win the league and the next season be so bad, as you know, it hurts me to say it.
But you could flip it and say the team that nearly got relegated finished sixth. If they come sixth, they're going to come above Chelsea, either Liverpool or Tottenham, and possibly another big team.
But if you look at their form since around 2015 form, it actually is top six form.
True,
so.
True.
Based on that, yeah, I've got to go with Chelsea.
Troy?
I'm going to break the apricot. Leicester.
You think Leicester will be the bigger shock?
Tell you why, because when they appointed Ranieri, I was like, why are we bringing this man
I think everyone did. Yeah.
I like Ranieri, you know.
There
I
must
like
be people out there that can manage a club that we haven't heard and brings... Like Liverpool got Klopp. We hadn't seen Klopp. We want to see him. We've
something
seen
new, something fresh. Something new.
Yeah. And look what the bugger's gone and done with that team. They are, and Nigel Pearson did fantastic with them in the last part of the season. This man has taken them to another level.
Next level, yeah.
And no one expects to see, with the resources and whatever else, no one expects to see Leicester City in the top six.
Indeed. All right, so G, let's talk a little bit about Stoke. And I want to talk about their stability and ask the question, are they the real model of a stable Premier League club? Because Southampton and Swansea were the two teams the last 2 years used as the examples of two well-run clubs that are established. But Swansea might go down this year, and Southampton win two, lose two, win two at the moment. Whereas Stoke, they've been in the league now 5-6 years. They've been in Europe. They've been to a cup final. They're the team really now that you're looking at as a, if you're going to come up, do it the Stoke way. They look solid, rinsing out City on the weekend. Are they the team for you that's a sign of progression?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to take anything away from Southampton or Swansea because I think they're good models as well, particularly Swansea. But I think Stoke get overlooked probably because of the brand of football when they first came up, you know, with the Rory Delap long throw, and you know, Tony Pulis is quite notorious for a certain way of football which you either love or you hate. But I think if you look at their model, they've done really well. I think they did sacrifice maybe good football for 2 or 3 years just to get on a really good standing within, you know, within the Premier League. And they've built on that. They've still kind of kept the foundations of what Tony Pulis built with like Shawcross and Butland and other, you know, other players around that. But they've added some real talent. I don't know how they're getting all those good players to go up to Stoke. Because I've been there and there's nothing around there. But however they're doing it, they've got a real good nucleus of really exciting players. And they're a team that I think could really push on.
Well, that's an excellent point you actually bring up there. Because I thought about that same question. Why are they getting those players? And I think it's a combo. I'm going to ask you, Zeke, of two things. It's a combo of they've got Mark Hughes, who, let's not forget, played for Barcelona, so he's a relatively big name for a Brit across Europe in the European scene. Mm. And secondly, I think what's happening is, unlike Southampton, Swansea, and some of the other teams in that mid-table, your West Broms or whatever, I think they accept who they are and are not selling the club as a club to almost bring players in and grow as one. I think they don't mind bringing good players in, accepting Bojan might leave next year. But for the two years that you are here, you're going to do well. We're going to do well. We don't mind being a shop window. Mm. Everton want to buy good players and keep them. But Everton are not a big, you know, successful club. Where Stoke, it seems like, well, we're bringing these top players. And if you leave in 2 years, cool, we don't mind that. But while you're here, can you take us to the next level?
Mm. No, I think that's pretty much it. Hughes plays a big factor there. You know, I think these players would have a good amount of respect for Hughes. And it's all about the package which they sell to these players. And I know in each and every one of their contracts, it'll be you have a sell-on clause, or if you select your top 10 clubs, if they come in for you, they'll make it easy for those players to feel like they're not going to be locked in there. But all we want you to do is turn up, play your minutes, play for us while you're here, and be a shop window. And if they do that, then Stoke benefit, as we saw on Saturday. Truthfully, I don't think any Stoke fan would realistically feel that, you know, any one of those three guys or four guys at the top there, if a big club came in for them, that they would stay. But right now, they don't mind. And for me, Stoke, in terms of how they've stabilised the club since they've been in the Premiership, which is fantastic in terms of just as a business mind, it's fantastic. What I say to that as a fan is, well done. Me, personally, if I supported Stoke, I wouldn't think, oh yeah, you know, 10 years in the Prem, however long it's been, we're stable. Nah. I would want the ups and the downs and the cup wins, and but that's me, right? The West Brom lifestyle of potentially going down but staying up, last day of the season, that's the joy. Whereas I feel Stoke fans have kind of just been a bit numb to the whole glory. And
but isn't that changing now? Because isn't that why Pulis ended up getting moved on? Because for a while I was like, thank you very much, Tony, you've established us as a mid-table team, great, but now we want to go to that next level.
I think
we need someone that can take
that
next level.
That is the objective, definitely. But only up until Saturday did I think, actually, older, what's going on over that Stoke? That was Barcelona-esque type play that I'm watching here. So, you know, I'll keep watching them, and I hope they do, you know,
kick on
from here. But just in terms of your question, for me as a fan, there's only so much I can get from knowing my club is financially stable. Mm. Knowing, in 20 years I have a club to support. What about today, man?
Yeah.
Where's the hoorah from my team?
So. Yeah. And Troy, you watched the game on Saturday, wasn't it? Saturday midday against City. Do you see a team there? Everyone's talking about West Ham for top six, Leicester top six, Everton top six. Everyone forgetting about Stoke. Do you see a team there that you think could penetrate that top six and get a top six spot? Good keeper, good centre back. They know their roles, and you got the four up top that are doing their thing.
Can I put it into perspective?
Go for it.
Stoke are 11th. Stoke are 11th.
But what's the points gap between 11th and 6th?
No, hold on.
I bet not that much.
Stoke 11th. Uh-huh. And if they hadn't beaten Manchester City on Saturday, I don't think we'd be talking about Stoke.
So I agree.
They're not pulling up no trees. They have an easy on the eye forward line. They've won 6, they've lost 5. Jack Butland has kept them in most of their games. I don't see anything there at the moment that's going to break the top 6, that's going to break the top 8. I don't see them they are an established Premier League side because they're always in the Premier League. They're not. Mm. They don't fight relegation. They don't, you know, they get there and then they just fiddle back into where they are now. Mm. 11th.
Yeah.
And all right, you might say, the point of it. Stoke could very easily go and lose a game that we'd expect them to win on Saturday or whenever, because they've just beaten Man City. They've just beaten a poor Man City. Mm. Who without Vincent Kompany don't look anything like they should. No Yaya Toure.
Mm.
What happens with the game, fans, whatever? They get carried away after one game, and all of a sudden, we're
in the league.
Yeah. There's a few in here, isn't there? Do you know what I mean? So let's dampen down the expectations. Let's see Stoke where they are in February, March. And let's see if they're then gonna crack on and push on, because that's the vital time.
Yeah.
Now sets your base.
Yeah.
February, March.
We see who really serious.
We see who's really. Are you serious?
Yeah.
Or are you just skylarking? Weren't you? You were messing about.
Yeah.
Because Man City is good on your CV. We raise the game. Shaqiri, absolutely fantastic on Saturday. How much have people been talking about him for the rest of the season?
Not at all.
Not much, really. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Bojan's only just come back from injury. He's a great player, but he's only just come back from injury. Showed some great stuff on Saturday, but he's only just come back from a long-term injury. Mm. They're a club in development. Listen, Mark Hughes will always stabilise things. That does he really push on and crack on?
Good point. I think come Jan, Feb, you know, May, they'll be 10th.
They'll be where they are.
That's what they do. And that's all they need to expect. If they can be 10th, but playing differently, more attractive football, then at least the fans can say...
But then why not keep Pulis?
I don't think Pulis...
No, I'm just saying, why not keep Pulis?
I think he was just branded as he's not the guy.
So they're buying all these exciting players now. The Stoker, who, Lallona, whatever you call
Stoke
him.
Lallona,
the
yeah.
Stoker-Lona. They're buying all these players now. Lallona. To actually finish in the same position that they were finishing when Pulis was there.
Champions League, how many of the three teams that are not yet through are going through, do you feel? Bearing in mind, you know, the scoreline of the current score for the Man United game.
Yeah, I know the scoreline, but I'm still going to say...
He's still sceptical.
I'm still going to say one, and it would be Chelsea.
You think?
Yeah.
Is that with your Chelsea head on, or is that with your football head on?
That's with my football head on. I need to get an update on the score to see whether things have changed. But I think Arsenal are going to go out, unfortunately. I guess if you'd asked me at the start of the night, I wouldn't have thought that Man United could go away to Wolfsburg and win. And even that might not have been enough if my calculations are correct. So, yeah, I think what we've got to our advantage is we've got a home game, although, you know, the last couple of weeks
that's kind of a disadvantage, just for you lot.
But I think one team will go through with Chelsea, and it's a shame because we've had a big fall from grace in the Champions League in terms of where we are now and what we think is a good result, and just really struggling to get through the groups.
On your team, G, bearing in mind the group you're in is relatively easy. Yeah. You're the champions of England. Mm-hmm. You spent how much money? Oh, I've asked you on this pod before about Jose's future and whether, in regards to the league's performances, whether he should go. I'm going to ask you earlier today, if he doesn't qualify from this group, bearing in mind, you don't even have to win tomorrow, do you? Just, I think a draw takes you through.
A draw takes us through depending on other results.
Right. So if he can't navigate his way out of the group, the two trophies that Roman Abramovich wants, he won't get, and your season's over by Christmas. Does he have to offer his resignation tomorrow morning or the following morning?
No, I've never really gone with this. I said the same thing when Di Matteo was sacked, once we didn't qualify for the Champions, or it became clear we weren't going to qualify for the Champions League knockout stages last time around. Sacking the manager or him resigning isn't going to put us back into the Champions League.
But is it in itself unforgivable to not get out of that group? Forget the league form for a moment. That group is not a difficult group. You're the champions. Yeah. And to not get out of that group, especially now where you've got one foot in the next round, if he messes it up now, is that just
It's a bad underachievement. And you know what? Based on previous history, it wouldn't be out of sync for him to lose his job based on that. However, I think he's built up enough good equity. I think he should get another chance. I think even if we get through the group stages this year, I mean, what are we going to do anyway? You know, the chances are as soon as we meet, any formidable opposition, we're going to go out. Now, I know there's the money financial element to it as well, but I still think he should be here next season, regardless of what happens. We've had this debate already, so we won't get into it again. Give him the
chance. Just write the season off and go again next year.
But I'm confident that we're going to go through. I'm not too worried about that.
We'll talk tomorrow. Zeke, you're a United fan. Can you see United get into the semi-finals if you qualify with this brand of football? Now, I ask that question simply because, let's say you qualify tonight. Mm-hmm. Let's say you get a nice draw, a tier two European team, and you navigate your way through that. With the brand of football he's playing, it's basically been hard to beat. I'm not saying you're going to win the Champions League, but if you qualify tonight, can you see United get into the semi-finals?
I can see it, but I don't think that's very likely. No, it's not going to happen. You know, why am I lying to myself? No, it's not going to happen. The football, it's just been really poor. I mean, I understand it's good to build that foundation from the back. And, you know, I'm not standing here like some football United fans calling for LVG's head. I'm not. But we need to be the United that we all know. And we need to play a different style of football. Whether that turns on in Jan and everyone starts popping off the goals, then we'll see. But right now, it's just... Am I going to expose him? I fell asleep, you know. And the last
my next question there. You said to me you fell asleep twice during the game on Saturday.
To fair play, I just got back from playing 90 minutes on a of a football game, but it was really bad. And so Champions League, nah. If we get through, which I think the scores now is looking a bit precarious, I don't think we're going to go past
that's where it ends.
Quarterfinals if we get there, but yeah, semi-finals now.
Okay, and finally, Troy. Let's assume that Arsenal and United get knocked out of the Champions League and drop into the Europa. Does that have an impact on the Premier League title race? Because you've then got Liverpool and Tottenham already in the Europa. Do the schedules of United and Arsenal then make it, I don't know, a bit more of a level playing field for all four teams in terms of going for the Premier League race? Or do you think it's still those two teams will still be favoured above Liverpool and Tottenham?
The last thing Wenger and Van Gaal will want is Europa League football. It's the last thing they would want.
And does that help Liverpool and Tottenham by default?
I don't know. Well, it brings everyone back to a level playing field. Yeah, it means that you know, the same scenario that Tottenham and Liverpool are going through, they're going to have to go through, and who knows where they could be going in Europa League. And if they're down in Europa League, they're going to want to win it because it provides them with Champions League football. I think it has a bigger effect on English football. Full stop. It means that we're not even getting out of the qualifying stages of the Champions League. You know, but I tell you now, don't write Arsenal off. You're looking at me like that for?
Is that, I've written them off.
No.
I almost choked when you said that.
Arsenal are one of those teams that will produce something tomorrow. They will go and produce something tomorrow, and it's quite conceivable, and go and get through by the skin of their teeth.
I think what they'll do is produce something quite heroic, like I've seen them do before. So they'll be 3-0 down, they'll come back to 3-2, everyone will be like, oh, that was great, but they'll still go out.
I actually agree. I think we'll win tomorrow, but I don't think we'll win by enough.
It's two goals you've got to win by, isn't it?
Or I think it worked out. If we win 4-3, we go through.
The thing is, Arsenal are quite capable of doing that. I don't
remember. There's no Santi or Sanchez as well. So that's two big goal threats.
It's not an issue. It's you know, with Arsenal, and it pains me to say it, but with Arsenal, you take a man out, you put a man in. You know, Ramsey looked a lot better on Saturday. All of a sudden, he's playing in a little role that he wants to. Not as his goal. I'm not saying he's back to where he was, but Theo comes in tomorrow. Theo loves European games, away games. All of a sudden, he opens up his pace, he opens up his legs. Everyone's forgetting Santi's injured.
Okay, so let's move on now to this week's Kind of Pundit Watch. I'm going to talk about Gary Neville, now formerly of Sky, the new temporary manager of Spanish club Valencia. Zeke, let's begin with you. Now, in his press conference, he was talking about a lot of things about why he took the decision to take the job at Valencia. And he said something quite significant, I thought, in there, where he said, for the sake of his credibility, he had to take the job. He couldn't turn it down. A, what did you, because I know what I interpreted that to mean. What did you think he meant? And secondly, do you agree?
I agree. I think he did. Well, you don't have to take the job, but I agree that he, in the decision to take the job. I think he spends, nowadays, his day job is telling people or analysing how everyone else plays the game in terms of the other team. So, in theory, he should have all the answers, right? he's become well-respected in terms of his views. He's done a great job for his role with Sky Sports. So, you know, with all those techs and gadgets at his disposal,
he's got no excuse really
because he's had the time to understand the game, see how it's being played, and now in his own mind he should have his own way he would execute the club. Valencia, I mean, I love Gary Neville. I absolutely love him, so I really want him to do well. It's a massive job. I don't like that temp title on it, because I think that kind of takes away from the role. If you're going to give him the job. But I think it's testament to where, you know, the good work he's done, that he's been offered that role. It's a massive one to take as your first head role, but I think he'll do well, hopefully.
That's my next point now. Gee, Valencia is a big club. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but probably the English equivalent, you guys can disagree or agree here, would probably be Arsenal. I mean, outside of Barca and Real, they're probably the biggest club in Spain. Yeah. You know, that's a massive club there.
Atletico Madrid?
I think Valencia are a bigger club than Atletico. Okay. I think traditionally they're a bigger club than Atletico. Yeah, yeah. Do you think it's a job that he will prove to be a job too big for him? And did he need to take a big job? Because I think the Swansea job this week might be available. He could have been running for that. I don't think Koeman will be at Southampton in the summer. That job might come up. Do you think that he just thought, I'm good mates with the owner, it's a big job, I back myself to do it? Or do you think it could bite him on the bum because it's such a big club, big first job?
Yeah, I agree with Zeke in that he, you know, I think it's the right decision to take it, because you can't bank on there being other jobs that come up in the future. You never know what's going to happen. In terms of what you said about Valencia being a big club, they are a big club. But, I mean, whereas in terms of stature, they probably are like Arsenal, like what you said. I think in terms of their fan base, from what I hear and what I read, they have a bit of that Liverpool about them, where they're historically a big club. And maybe the expectations of the fans are above what they can realistically achieve now. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, I looked at the table and they're only 5 points off the top four at the moment. And they forced the guy Nuno, I can't remember his second name, but they pretty much forced him to... forced him to resign. Resign before you go. They're 5 points off the top four. How much more
can you get out
will
of
Valencia... Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. You could say, well, they could be in the top four. Fine. Maybe they should be in the top four. Maybe they should be third behind Atletico, although Atletico's team looks better to me now. But how much more do you want to achieve? Like, what is the benchmark? If that's sackable or almost forcing you out, what would you have to achieve to be a success there? And that's where I think he might come unstuck. And it's similar to kind of, I know we spoke briefly about Jimmy Floyd getting the QPR job, where I think it's a great job. You have to take it, but you almost feel that you're going to be looking for another job in a year or 18 months' time. But you just got to look at that as a great opportunity and market yourself the best you can and come out of it as well as you can.
Okay, that's interesting. I hadn't thought about that, actually. Troy, do you think there's a slight conflict with Gary Neville and, I've forgotten, I should know, the owner of Valencia, who he's really good friends with?
Lim.
Yeah.
Who has business interests. I think he backs or he's partners in the Salford hotel.
Yeah.
Salford as well. Yeah. They've got a hotel in Manchester they own as well.
Hotel football.
Is there a slight conflict there? So you're working for someone that you have other business interests with. It's not definitely illegal, but is there a little bit something a bit fishy going on there?
Gary Neville is not getting that job if his friend is not chairman or pumping money into to Valencia.
His project.
He's not getting that job. I'm not being funny. He's an assistant manager at England. I'm not quite sure how he got that. No, I'm not serious. He hasn't done anything in the game, coaching-wise. And yet goes into an international setup, and then his first job is Valencia. Now, we said it earlier, the respect I have for that man and all of football since he's retired, he's turned people's opinion about him.
I hated him before he returned.
He's turned people's opinion about him because of his knowledge and his understanding and how he articulates the game. Turn people's opinion around. Coaching's a different matter. He's untried, he's untested. So he's going into the unknown, really. And we think that English fans are fickle. If Valencia do not pull up trees, because this is massive project. If they do not pull up trees, don't expect to see Gary Neville back in England, you know.
Taking a holiday, yeah?
If they don't pull up, and he will be expected to have them fighting for Champions League and the next echelon, which is third place, far as I'm concerned. Yeah. So 6 months,
is that why the 6 month contract is for him a win-win? Because if they do get third, he can walk away and say, look what I did. If they don't do well, he can walk away and say, well,
what happens in the summer?
6 months
there. What's happening in the summer?
The Euros.
How long has Roy Hodgson got left?
So you think he's kind of earmarking himself?
How long has Roy Hodgson got left?
Well, if they don't get out of the group in the Euros, that's him done.
He's done, okay. How many English managers are there?
A handful, at best.
Right. add Gary Neville to that because he would have managed in a top European in league. So natural progression to take the job.
So you think that he may think the FA are eyeing him up already, but he can't go straight from the assistant. So he's thinking, let me just do 6 months at a big club.
He has to have experience.
And then I can say I've managed a club.
He has to have experience. That's for me. Listen, I don't know what goes on behind the scenes. I'm not privy to, but you can't tell me that Gary Neville all of a sudden is the manager of... Are you listening to what we're saying? Gary Neville is the manager of Valencia. Forget head coach. Forget that. Gary Neville is the manager of Valencia. Let that settle for... And I know there was all this hoo-ha last week, but if I was a coach or whatever, I'd be like,
What have I got to do? what about me?
That's no disrespect, because I have the utmost respect for the man. Utmost respect. But 6 months doing that could lead to him, and who's going to question it?
Mm.
Who's going to question him being the national manager, if that's what it is? Because there isn't no English managers out there.
There's no one else.
One, two, three, do you know what I mean?
There's a couple, yeah. This final point, I'll put it to all three of you. This was the element that interested me about the appointment more than anything else. It's the fact that he's leaving Sky. Now, at a time when BT Sport is getting more and more games off Sky, I think on the pod, the other regulars, Ollie, Marvin and Tasha, the one thing we do all agree on is that our two favourite pundits are Graham Souness and Gary Neville. That we think they're the two best pundits out there.
Jamie Carragher won an award for the best pundit last
night. He's my favourite, but no one else agrees. But the only two we agreed on...
Who voted for that?
As fans.
Really?
He's my favourite as well. But the only two we agreed on were those two. Graham Souness has been not well for a couple of months now. Well. He's been off sick for a while. Gary Neville's gone. BT are getting more and more games off Sky. Mm. Is there a fear that they might lose subscribers because people are thinking, well, if you're getting less and less games, your pundits, your best pundits are kind of like leaving you? I mean, he may be back in next season, Gary Neville. We don't know.
Yeah.
But is there a fear that this might be worse for Sky than it might be for Gary Neville?
Well, Sky have now got to come into action again. They've got to now go, right, we've lost our biggest pulling attraction. He's the man.
The biggest pundit.
Yeah, let's be serious. When Andy Gray came and left, everyone was like, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
What? Seriously? Who are we going to listen to now? And there was that big hole, and Gary Neville has come and smashed it. People don't even remember Andy Gray no more. Mm. Only the long people. Do you know what I mean? He's come and smashed it. Sky now have to produce, and this time they have to do it quicker.
Yeah.
It ain't Thierry Henry.
Oh, no.
It ain't. Bless Jamie Redknapp until he starts matching his clothes, but it ain't Jamie Redknapp. They have to come. They tried Craig Bellamy last night,
I heard he wasn't bad.
They need someone that's going to come in and shape that market. Because as much as what BT, you know, have six man commentating on a game and one man in
their coverage isn't great. Don't get me wrong.
Well, this is what I'm saying. So as much as what they got, Owen, Hoddle, Rio, Redknapp,
20 man on the in the gantry.
You know what I mean. And people are commentating on the game I didn't even know was there. They're not actually blowing us away, are they?
No, really not.
So the market is there. And like you say, the big deal next season, Sky are going to come. And now Sky haven't got the money that people think they have.
Mm.
But they're going to come out and pull someone out of the hat.
G, do you think it will hurt Sky? Neville's leaving?
Yes and no. I think it will hurt the Sky customers because I think Neville has been a breath of fresh air. But I think ultimately people will watch where the games are.
If there's good games on, people will watch. They'll subscribe. They'll buy the package.
If Sky can get... The key for Sky, really, is more than getting the great pundit back, is getting the Champions League back. I don't know how long that contract's for, but if they can get the Champions League back, then they could have me and you on there. And I think people will still watch it.
Gonna watch it, true. Zeke, how much do you think it will hurt Sky in the long term?
I don't think it's going to hurt them that much at all, to be honest with you. I think the majority of football fans subscribe to Sky to watch football. The punditry and the commentating is kind of like a value add.
But you can't deny that in the last 3 or 4 years, punditry and analysis has risen a level to the point where a lot of people, probably like me, almost tune in for the punditry and analysis as much as the game.
That hour, Monday night football.
Yeah, I love it.
Before the game when they're dissecting the weekend's football.
A couple times I don't even watch the game.
It's amazing. It's amazing. It's amazing.
Aside from when they're talking about Chelsea, it's amazing.
your team. But you, so you don't think that
still? I mean, the game that is the most important thing. That is a value add, and we like nice things. And for me, that's a nice thing. It's not essential to a reason why I would subscribe to my Sky Sports package.
Yeah, I understand
package.
That. I understand.
So
that.
I don't think on when it comes down to it, people will still take it. This is annoying. Gary Neville's not there, and I don't get the quality that I was getting, but I'm still getting to see the football games, right?
Well, if the prices go up next season,
then that's a different situation. Me personally, I'll be moving to BT Sports. Sky, call me.
All right, guys, let's wrap it up there. Before we do, I did promise a competition for our listeners. The question is going to be, for those that were listening, Troy spoke very well about his role at Kikita and what he does. The question is simply going to be just tweet in what his actual position at Kick It Out is. So we want to know from people, nice and easy.
What's the prize?
What's the prize is a game, a free game from Foot Manager 2016.
And I'll throw in a one. Kick It Out t-shirt.
And a Kick It Out t-shirt.
Can I enter that?
No, you can't enter it.
I'm trying as we speak.
So once again, the question is tweet in to FFP_11. What is Troy Townsend's role position at Kick It Out? Tweet us in and we will pick one at random and send a copy of the Foot Manager game 2016 and a t-shirt, Kick It Out t-shirt, to one lucky winner. Thank you very much for that, Troy.
No worries at all.
Guys, you've been brilliant. Thank you very much for coming on the pod this week. Don't forget to subscribe, iTunes, Football Fans Podcast. Tell a friend, spread the word. Until next week, peace.
Ciao.